You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 423 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this fine Tuesday evening into Wednesday morning. I apologize for the slight delay on the podcast. I was planning to record on Monday evening, but had some travel-related nightmares coming back from a trip for my day job. So, when Delta doesn't cooperate, things can kind of go off the rails in a hurry. And I spent a lot of time in an airport and on airplanes on Monday. So please forgive me for that slight hiatus. And we're back with another episode of the podcast. I hope you guys are ready for some Hawks talk, as that's what we will definitely be doing today on the podcast. A couple of things to hit on before the central part of the podcast, which is going to be a mailbag. In fact, we're going to have a mailbag part one and part two. This will be part one. Part two will be later on in the week as we go through a bunch of questions that I got. I really appreciate everyone that went ahead and sent in questions. When I requested them on Twitter, I wasn't sure what I was going to get. Got a ton of questions, and I really appreciate that. So we'll be climbing through those in the next couple of episodes before we add on a guest or two for next week. I have one lineup for sure, and hopefully a second as well, as we start to dive into some big picture stuff when it comes to the offseason, because we are certainly in the dog days now with the Hawks kind of having their roster in place for the 2018-2019 campaign. But there was one bit of a rumor slash newsy item over the weekend, and that was a report from Kelly Iko of Rockets Wire over at USA Today. And he reported, and by the way, I should say, I'm not super familiar with Kelly, but at the same time, he was the one that actually broke the Clint Capela contract news. He was the first one to have the five-year contract for Clint Capela just a few days ago. So this is definitely a credible source over there covering the Houston Rockets. And he reports interest on the Rockets' behalf in Kent Bazemore. Not a huge surprise there. It's actually been a popular talking point. In fact, I got a question or two about that before the rumor even came to fruition. It's been something that sort of sitting out there. It's fairly obvious as a landing spot for Bazemore if the Hawks were urgent to trade him. And of course, the Rockets probably would have some urgency to try to find a two-way wing player because of the fact that they lost both Trevor Ariza and Luke Richard and Bob Mute in the offseason. They did replace those guys with James Ennis, and they still had Gerald Green. But at the same time, Houston's trying to win the title this season, and Kent Bazemore is not a superstar by any means. But at the same time, Bazemore is a two-way solid player that's certainly probably worth an eight-figure per season contract. He's slightly overpaid, as we talked about a number of times on the podcast. At the same time, the Rockets would probably have to include Ryan Anderson in the deal, and he actually makes more money than Kent Bazemore does over the next two seasons. Anderson makes a combined $41+ million over the next 2 years. Bazemore is actually less than $40 million, and the second year, I guess the last year of his four-year contract, but yeah, year two for our purposes now, is actually a player option for Kent for more than $19 million. I think the expectation should be that Bazemore is going to opt into that contract, but it's not an absolute certainty, I will say. Just because of the fact that Bazemore played very well this season, and if he thinks that there's a payday on the table for him as he reaches sort of the end of his prime next summer, if he has a really good season in Atlanta this year, I guess it's at least conceivable that he could opt out in search of a long-term, you know, 3-4 year deal at eight figures per season. Still, I think the assumption probably has to be that he opts in there, so he's owed more than $37 million over the next two seasons. I do think that Bazemore is a better player than Anderson, pretty substantially at this point in time. I think Anderson's probably even more famous still at this point in time, and at one point was definitely a sort of more counting stats player. And you know, his shooting is very, very good from a big man spot. But we've seen in the last couple of seasons that he's kind of tough to play in certain lineups, especially at the highest level of the sport where the Rockets are trying to compete. So I think on the Rockets' end, it makes a lot of sense. They would look to trade Anderson for Bazemore. I do think that at least one first-round pick would have to be coming for Anderson, with Anderson, I should say, to Atlanta to make that have any sense for the Hawks whatsoever. You may remember that Bazemore was tied to a pre-draft rumor that involved Wesley Matthews and the Dallas Mavericks. That, of course, did not actually happen. And I've been vocal on the podcast saying that I'm not sure what the urgency is to trade Bazemore. He's a solid two-way player. He is certainly overpaid, but at the the same time, he's someone who's a good leader in the locker room, and someone who doesn't really hurt you anywhere. I will say the argument against that would be that Baze is actually a little bit too good for what the Hawks want to do. There's been some of that pushback when I say that kind of stuff on the podcast and on Twitter in the last couple of days, and that, you know, right now at this moment, I do think the Hawks are sort of going to be in the bottom tier, but there's an argument to be had that the Hawks, if everything went well with Trae Young, especially, and Jeremy Lin's health, et cetera, might be a little bit too good for this next coming season. I'm not sure that's a huge concern for me at this point, but Bazemore definitely helps the Hawks win. And if they don't want to do that necessarily this year, I think it might have something to do with him, with the Hawks wanting to move off of Bazemore, is to kind of create that hole in the wing and potentially pave the way to play Kevin Huerter more, Tyler Dorsey more, maybe even a little bit Daniel Hamilton, all those guys that are a little bit younger and obviously worse than Bazemore at this point in time. So for me, I would not be able to do this deal if I was the Hawks GM, if I was not getting at least one first round pick, and probably for me more than one first round pick. I think there's a deal, in fact, in the Kelly Eichel report, the suggestion that he put out there was Ryan Anderson and a 2019 first round pick for Kent Bazemore. I probably would not do that if I was Atlanta, because, you know, for as much as Houston probably got worse in the offseason, that's still going to be a team that wins 50 plus games this year. You're pretty much locking into a 25, 26, 27, 28 kind of pick if you do that. And I'm not sure I would do that trade, frankly, if I was the Hawks. If you look at the future a little bit more, when there's more uncertainty for Houston, that might be a little bit more interesting. If you get an unprotected pick from the Rockets, or a lightly protected pick from the Rockets in 2020 or 2021 or 22, obviously, you know, either 21 or 22 is probably going to be the one and done sort of combo draft. That might be very interesting as well, but I'm sure Houston would not want to part ways with that kind of draft asset lightly. So it kind of depends on the urgency on both sides here. There's probably a partnership to be made, but, you know, Hawks fans asking if the Hawks could move off of Bazemore to Houston without taking on Anderson, there really is no way to do that, just because of the fact that in order to match salary, Anderson is the only one with a big salary on the Houston roster right now that probably would be movable if you're looking for that kind of deal to come together from at least a two-team trade between Houston and Atlanta. So nothing super, you know, harsh in the reporting there. It's kind of a situation where there's interest on Houston's side, but I think the Hawks probably would be a little bit skeptical there. Also, that report mentions the New Orleans Pelicans as a team that's expressed interest in Bazemore. That's nothing new. They've been linked to Bazemore in the past, and that would probably be a deal centered around Solomon Hill and Alexis Ugenza to make salaries match in the same way. The upside of that deal for Atlanta versus the Ryan Anderson deal would be that Solomon Hill makes considerably less than Bazemore. Also, you know, Hill's not a great player by any means, but he's a good defender. Probably would be at least a solid-ish role player if he was healthy. And Ugenza only makes about $5.5-6 million, and that's only 1 year of salary. So in year two, the Hawks would actually have a little bit less and more flexibility to work with. For me, though, and it's not that enticing, and New Orleans would seemingly be a little bit less interested in including a draft pick there. So I'm not sure this anything happens there. I do think if there's any domino that will fall with the roster between now and training camp, it probably will center on a Kent Bazemore trade or a Dwayne Dedmon trade. If you were to ask me if I thought both guys would be on the roster, I would say yes. At this point in time, I've not heard anything otherwise, but it's certainly conceivable the Hawks could find a partner for either one of those guys in the near future, because they are interesting players. You know, Dedmon's a positive asset on his contract, to be sure. Probably a solid starting center for a lot of teams. Bazemore is not a positive asset, but at the same time, it's not hugely negative at this moment, because he is a quality two-way wing, and those guys are in high demand at this point in time. I think a year from now, if the Hawks were looking to trade Kent Bazemore as an expiring contract, he probably wouldn't even be a negative anymore. It's one of those things where, or at least a slight one, especially if he plays the way that he did last year for the Hawks. So just something to file away in the future. I do think that, you know, Houston makes total sense on Houston's side why they would want Kent Bazemore. If I am the Hawks, though, I am looking to extract multiple assets if possible, whether that be, you know, two first rounders or De'Anthony Melton or whatever you want to throw out there for Houston. I don't think one, at least in 2019, for sure, pick would be enough for me, although a deal like that would make some sense if you were the Hawks. So plenty more to talk about there if something else happens and if there's more news in the future, but for now, that's kind of what we know at this point in time. I do want to take a moment before we get to the rest of the podcast to take a minute and thank you guys for listening to the podcast today. I really appreciate everyone that's already listening to the show on a regular basis. If you're a new listener, I really appreciate you joining us on the pod. Hopefully you will subscribe to the show if you like to listen to the podcast. We should be everywhere that podcasts are available: Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, you know, there's all player.fm. Every single podcast is also hosted on peacetreehoops.com, where I'm the editor-in-chief, and that's the SB Nation home of the Hawks. So I would recommend that as a sort of a one-stop shop for all Hawks content. And thanks again for listening to the show, everybody. Please leave a 5-star review if you like the podcast. Rate the show, review, all that fun stuff, and we really appreciate that. After this quick break, we'll be back again with the rest of the podcast. Okay, we're back, and a couple of, I guess, one quick newser to hit on before we get into the mailbag questions, and that is the fact that the Hawks preseason schedule is now officially available. We knew a lot of these dates beforehand, thanks to the reporting of Christopher Moore of the AJC, and also some of the announcements around the league, but the Hawks will be playing 5 games in the preseason, 2 at home against the Pelicans and Spurs, and then 3 on the road against the Grizzlies, Thunder, and Miami Heat. That's the full schedule could be found on PeachtreeHoops.com. But you know, Monday, October 1st is the opener against New Orleans. That's going to be at McCamish Pavilion at Georgia Tech at 7:30 before going on the road for the October 5th and October 7th games against the Grizzlies and Thunder. Back home on October 10th against the Spurs in a Wednesday evening game at McCamish over Georgia Tech, and then Friday, October 12th, finishing up the slate at Miami. So an opportunity to see some interesting pieces. You know, New Orleans, I'm not sure what kind of talent they're going to be bringing, but that might be Anthony Davis in the building for Georgia Tech. That'll be interesting to watch. Hawks Grizzlies will theoretically include Jaren Jackson and Trae Young, which is always fun. The Thunder, obviously there's a tie-in there with Dennis Schroeder. I'm not sure he'll be playing in that game considering it's a preseason game, but it's also going to be in Tulsa. And sort of a high profile, if you could have a high profile preseason game, that probably will be it for the Thunder. And then, Hawks Spurs has DeMar DeRozan in tow, all that whole thing. And then Hawks Heat, of course, a division rivalry. So plenty of intrigue there. We'll definitely talk about that more on the pod as it approaches in October. But we at least know that. You can mark your calendars now if you want to attend those games at Georgia Tech. I'll be in attendance, of course, covering those games. So, but there it is for those 5 games. We'll have plenty more to talk about in the future there. 2 mailbag questions to get to on this podcast before we move into part 2 on the next show. And the first one comes from at JamNacho1 on Twitter, and he asks if I have thoughts on the influence of ownership and a marketing slant over some of the decisions this offseason, including the Trae Young trade, Jeremy Lin, and Vince Carter. I will say, as a quick aside here that's sort of tied into this, Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo discussed the Hawks on a recent podcast. They got a lot of reaction from Hawks fans. I am a fan of Ryan Russillo, to be sure. Always been a big fan of his, and I grew up reading Bill Simmons. He was a huge influence on a lot of people that are my age in the industry. I don't think that Bill is right about this by any means. In fact, I had a nice little tweet thread kind of eviscerating what I thought Simmons was wrong about. Basically, he is not a big fan of the Hawks offseason, including the Dennis Schroeder trade and the Trae Young trade. I will say I did not love the Trae Young Luka Doncic trade, something that I've talked about a lot. If you want to listen to that, if you're a new listener on the podcast, I've written about that as well as talked about that back after the draft. So I definitely would encourage you guys to go back and listen to that for my full thoughts. But in short, I was a big fan of Luka Doncic, wasn't as high on Trae Young. So I do think there is some risk there, but simply put, I do not really understand the analysis of the Dennis Schroeder trade at all. I really love that trade for the Hawks, and I've said that at the time, but clearing that future money, et cetera, was a very, very good idea for the Hawks, especially after they made the move to go ahead and add Trae Young to the roster. That kind of spelled the end of the Dennis Schroeder era in Atlanta. So I want to at least address that. A lot of people were asking me about that, so I guess wanted to fold that in here. And I also, by the way, like the deal for the Thunder. I think it actually makes a little bit of sense, despite the fact that Dennis and Russell Westbrook are not great fits together. It's a talent upgrade for the Thunder, and at the price that they had to get there, it kind of does make sense for the Thunder. But anyway, without going down that rabbit hole, I understand Hawks fans. Everybody was asking me for my reaction. That's going to be it, and I definitely tweeted more about it. But I did understand the podcast. It's always one of those things where you get Hawks news on a national podcast always gets people sort of pointing in my direction and asking for reactions. So there you go. That's my reaction to that. But back to the original question. It's one of those things. I said at the time that I heard some rumblings of marketing influence on the Trae Young pick. They haven't gone away. Something that people around the league seemingly believe at this point in time. I will not tell you for 100% certainty that the pick was motivated by marketing, but it's something that's definitely out there in the media and people around the league that I've talked to, both in Las Vegas during the summer league, after the draft, all that fun stuff. Kind of just reaching around and trying to find people that know things about the Hawks and all that fun stuff. I do think. that that's a sort of a consensus opinion that marketing had something to do with what the Hawks did. Trae Young, of course, is the most famous player in this draft by a wide margin. He also plays a very entertaining style of basketball, and it's one of those things where it makes a ton of sense for a team like the Hawks, who finished last year in attendance in the entire league, to want to sort of add that kind of infusion of talent and intrigue to the proceedings. I will say, though, again, I do not know that for sure. It's one of those things where it does make sense on all levels, but something that I'm not going to tell you that I absolutely have nailed down from a reporting perspective. The Jeremy Lin trade even feels more like that, frankly, just because I think Jeremy Lin's fan base is substantial in Atlanta, also quite passionate, and somebody, Jeremy Lin's someone who can certainly inspire a lot of people to go out and buy tickets and buy jerseys almost individually. And because of the fact that, you know, that trade was kind of oddly timed and just the situation was kind of strange, I think that actually makes even more sense from a marketing standpoint in some ways, because, you know, Lin's on an expiring contract. At best, he's going to be a sort of part-time starter, part-time reserve for this team. I can't imagine he's going to be starting all season long. I think it would not surprise me all that much if Jeremy Lin started the season as the starting point guard, with Trae Young coming along a little bit more slowly, although he's going to play a lot regardless. But by the end of the year, I'll be pretty surprised if Jeremy Lin's playing starter level minutes on a team that also employs Trae Young. But still, it's one of the situations where he could definitely help you on the court, but Jeremy Lin definitely helps you at the box office and in jersey sales, all that fun stuff. Vince Carter, I'm not sure there's much marketing there, frankly. He's not going to play very much. I think the Hawks kind of already know that, and I think people are sort of already assuming that. He's very, very famous, of course, and at one point was arguably one of the biggest stars in the world. But I'm not sure that he is going to be a huge box office draw as a bench guy, sort of pseudo assistant coach, kind of leadership player. But still, I all told, with those three guys, I'd be lying if I said I didn't think marketing influence had something to do with either one or both of the Young and Lin additions. And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. I'm sort of always said that I believe that the best thing for basketball standpoint is to have your basketball people make decisions and make those decisions free of influence from the ownership group and also from marketing and all that fun stuff. That's also not necessarily realistic. Around the league, it's going to happen all the time where you're going to have somebody in your ear, whether it be ownership or marketing or somebody else, or the CEO or Steve Kuhn and all that fun stuff. Somebody's going to be wanting to talk to you about that. At the end of the day, I think Travis Schlenk likes Trae Young. I think Travis Schlenk likes Jeremy Lin as a basketball player. This is not a only marketing move. There's been some of that. I would definitely push back on that completely. It's not a situation where, you know, ownership comes down and say, you have to draft this guy. I would not push that narrative, to be honest, but I do think it would also be kind of naive to ignore the fact that they're going to sell more tickets based on Trae Young. They're going to sell more tickets based on Jeremy Lin, and that does matter. So, you know, nothing breaking news with the way that I'm talking about that there. I will definitely acknowledge that, but at the same time, you know, I hear more things than most people do, I will say, about the Hawks, and continually I keep hearing that had something to do with it, but that's not from the people that are actually making the decision. That, you know, that's not Travis Schlenk telling me that, it's not Tony Russell telling me that, and in the end, we probably won't know, at least for a long time, how much that influence had. So it's a situation where, you know, nobody's incentivized to tell that story at this point in time. Once this ownership group is not there, or once Travis Schlenk is not there, maybe I'll get the entire behind-the-scenes story, but until then, we kind of have to go with what we're given, and that's the fact that, you know, the front office really likes Trae Young, front office really likes Jeremy Lin, and we'll see if those moves work out on the basketball court. But it definitely helps them sell some tickets, and I'm not sure the Hawks are going to be, you know, a ticket juggernaut this year, but they're going to be selling more tickets this year than they were last year. I am pretty confident in that. Last thing on the pod before we move into a part two, it's going to run later in the week. And this question comes from at @ctrim49. And he says, are you concerned that the Hawks don't have a third point guard with Jeremy Lin's health history and Trae Young being a rookie? I will say that on the Jeremy Lin front, all indications are that he's going to be back for training camp. He did suffer a ruptured patella tendon in October. That's a long-term injury, but he'll be basically out for a full year by the time the season starts. He was injured in the first game of the season, which is so brutal. With that said, I do think you have some concern with Jeremy Lin, just because he's an older guy. I think, you know, once he's healthy, he's going to be healthy. But until you just absolutely see him on the court, there's at least some faint concern about that kind of injury. That's a pretty serious injury for Jeremy Lin. But still, you have him and Trae Young are the only natural point guards on this roster. It was a little bit surprising that the Hawks didn't bring in a third guy. A little bit surprising. I wasn't stunned at all about that. I will say, you know, first and foremost, the Hawks do have Jalen Adams on a two-way contract, so that's sort of an inherent third point guard if something were to happen. And the only way that you would need more from a third point guard other than Jalen Jalen Adams, and who of course has that 45-day cap, at least during the G League season, that he can be on the Hawks roster. Only way you would need more than that probably is if you get a long-term injury to either Lin or Young. If that happens, the Hawks probably will have to make a move in some other direction, I will say. But there are ways to do that. But Jalen Adams could certainly act as that third point guard. If you have a sort of a day-to-day injury to one of those guys, you bring Jalen Adams back from Erie, have him serve as the backup, and kind of just go from there. So that sort of provides some cover for only carrying two point guards when you have one of your two-way guys as a point guard, maybe not a pure point guard, but certainly someone who's going to be playing point guard at the NBA level if he's ever playing there. Also, you have other options. Daniel Hamilton, who the Hawks recently signed to a one-year contract, at least reportedly signed. The Hawks not announced that contract just yet, but he's sort of a combo forward, point forward type. He played a lot of point guard, actually, in the G League last year, despite the fact that he's a legit 6'7", 6'8", kind of guy on the wing. He's definitely a wing-sized player, but someone who's comfortable with the ball in his hands, averaged a near triple-double last year in the G League. And I think part of that signing, at least, is going to be to have some insurance with the ball in his hands. I do think if you have an injury sort of mid-game or something like that, and you need a third point guard, he might actually be the first option to go to right now. I'm not 100% sure about that. We won't know until training camp, but sort of on paper, he's the most natural point guard of the guys who are still available on this roster. You know, Daniel Hamilton is definitely a question mark because he's not necessarily an established NBA player, but in terms of guys who've played point guard extensively at a professional level, he's certainly one of those players. Also, you have Kent Bazemore, who the Hawks have used as a point guard in the past. He played point guard in Golden State long ago. Not the best role for Baze, but he's definitely improved as a creator in the last year or two. I think with Mike Budenholzer, he definitely trusted him with the ball in his hands. It sort of remains to be seen with Lloyd Pierce, but Bazemore can fake it for a game or two as a backup point guard type on the ball. And also, you also still have DeAndre Bembry, who I'm not sure that's going to be his best role. It's sort of an emergency-only situation for Bembry, but he's someone who at least can fake it sort of in the same way that Bazemore can. I think he's probably the last option of these players that I'm mentioning, but they do have some people that can at least fake point guard, have the ball in their hands more often. I do think, though, again, if the Hawks have a long-term injury or if Jeremy Lin's not ready to start camp, you might be looking around to see what they can do at point guard. But, with the two guys they already have, plus Jalen Adams and Daniel Hamilton, they're going to be okay. And it's not a situation where they absolutely have to get a third point guard naturally on the roster at this point in time. There were other options. I would have probably not hated them going out and getting somebody else at point guard in place of Vince Carter or in place of Daniel Hamilton or something like that. But what they did is absolutely fine. And, midseason, they could certainly do something as well. If they were to trade Dwayne Dedman midseason or Kent Bazemore or even Vince Carter or whatever they want to do, Jeremy Lin, guys that might make sense to be traded midseason, they could certainly go out and add a point guard at that point in time out of the G League or however they want to handle that. So there are other options. But for now, I'm not concerned about having two point guards. And unless we have some Jeremy Lin injury weirdness, I will not be concerned as the season opens either. So that's going to do it for the podcast today. I definitely recommend you guys staying tuned for part two coming in the next day or two when we have, three or four more questions, five more questions to hit on, including some concession stuff. We're talking about Phillips Arena. Definitely, that was a popular question that I was asked in the recent past. Some power ranking stuff, Torian Prince, Miles Plumlee, Kevin Herter, some questions that on those guys in the near future that I could definitely want to address. So I know we're sort of in the dead period, but hopefully this podcast will be something to keep you tuned to the Atlanta Hawks in the next, month and a half, 2 months before we get into training camp and the wheels really start turning towards the 2018-2019 season. So please subscribe to the podcast, do all that fun stuff, and we'll see you guys in a day or two.